Shivratri Part 2, 2010, discussing Rudra Gita, 4th Canto, Bhagavatam, Chapter 24, Text 69. This is at the end of Rudra's prayer being recited before the Prachetas and glorification of the Lord. This is one of the Shruti Phals. And here he's describing Idam japatapadramvo vishuddha nripanandanaha sadaramam anutishtanto bhagavat yarpitashaya. O Prachetas, execute your occupational duty as kings with a pure heart. Just chant this Rudra Gita, fixing your mind on the lotus feet of Krishna. That will bring you all good fortune. Idam japata badrambo. For the Lord will be very much pleased with you. So he's saying that idam japata badram. By chanting this prayer, everything will become auspicious. So Prabhupada describes in general the effect of offering prayers to the Lord, Radha Kripa Kataksha, Krishna Kripa Kataksha, Krishna Deva, Pavantam Stotram, Gopal, Sahasranam. Various beautiful prayers are there. Srila Prabhupada says, simply by offering prayers to Lord Krishna, one can become perfect. And then he goes so far to say, because he's taking the word japata badram, all auspiciousness brought about by chanting this prayer, Rudra Gita, and Prabhupada takes this as an indication of the power of prayer. And what is the best of all prayers? The best of all prayers is the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, which is also the supreme prayer. And Prabhupada describes the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is also a prayer. For this prayer addresses the Supreme Personality of Godhead by His name and invokes good fortune by petitioning Lord Krishna to allow one to engage in His service. The Hare Krishna mantra also says, my dear Lord Krishna, my dear Lord Ram, O energy of the Lord, Hare, kindly engage me in your service. And next verse, Prabhupada discusses the relationship between guru and disciple in the purport. He's saying that a disciple should not only practice the instructions received from the spiritual master, but he should also distribute this knowledge to one's disciples. Prabhupada is indicating here the parampara, the continuation of the parampara, because Lord Shiva is preaching to the Prachetas and he expects them to preach to their praja, or residents, or subjects in their kingdom. So Prabhupada is saying he's telling us here we should carry out and execute and fulfill the orders of him, or Srila Prabhupada, and also distribute this knowledge to one's disciples. So Prabhupada is expecting his own disciples, by this purport, to also become gurus and distribute the knowledge and realizations that they have received from Prabhupada. One of the last verses in the chapter 71 describes something called Muni Brata. Yugadesham Upasadya Darayanto Munivrataha Samahita Diya Sarva Etad Abhyasatadrita. Dear Prachetas, in the form of prayer, I have delineated the yoga system of chanting the holy name. Yoga Adesham Upadesh, Yoga Adesham. Instructions on Bhakti Yoga. All of you should take this important stotra, Rudra Gita, within your minds and promise to keep it in order to become great sages. By acting silently like a great sage and giving attention and reverence, you should practice this method. Lord Shiva is referring to something here as the Muni Brata. So what is the Muni Brata? In Magh Maina, January, February, every year, they have one day, Amavasya, dark moon, which is called Moni Amavasya. And on this day, many saintly people, they observe the Muni Brat, or the Moni Brat. They maintain silence. So the Muni, for the whole day, from sunrise to sunrise, 24 hours, that's a very good practice for controlling the wayward mind and the pushings of the tongue. Vachovegam, Manasakrodha, Jivavegam. And Lord Shiva is describing that here. He says, by acting silently like a great sage, you should chant this prayer. This Muni Brat is actually a Brat, 7 days, Mon Brat. We say Mon Brat, which means a vow of silence, not speaking anything to anyone about anything for 7 days. It's a very effective way to control the flapping tongue, which has a continual tendency to speak nonsense or prajalpa, gramya katha, Muni Brat. Well, Prabhupada explains in the purport what is the highest form of Muni Brat. The highest meaning of this brat, of taking a vow of silence. He says that a vow, the Muni Brat means the always glorifying Krishna. Prabhupada even glorifies the Muni Brat or Mon Brat by saying, this Muni Brat is very significant because those who are interested in advancing in spiritual life must be silent. So other schools of yoga, Raj Yoga, Hatha Yoga, and other, even Advaitins and other philosophical pursuers, they follow this Muni Brat 1 day a week, 1 month a year, or weekends, to control the mind, to purify the sense of hearing and speaking, and also purify the mind by, just like if we fast and don't eat any food or water, it purifies the physical body, cleanses it of all the dirt. There's also mental fasting. Muni Brat is a type of mental fasting where the mind is denied speaking any nonsense material vibrations. So as the body becomes purified by fasting, the mind becomes purified by fasting from prajalpa and fasting from gramyakata and fasting from any type of speaking of any vibration. The Moni Brat, Mon Brat, Muni Brat. But Prabhupada says that silence means, for the bhakti yogi, silence means only talking of Krishna, Krishna Kata. This was the silence of the great devotee, Mahajan Ambarish. Savai mana Krishna padara vindayor. Vacham sivai kunta gunanu varnane. The Prabhupada says that King Ambarish always fixed his mind on the lotus feet of the Lord and talked only about Krishna. Prabhupada said we should take this opportunity in life to become as good as a great saint by not talking unnecessarily with unwanted persons. We should either talk of Krishna or chant Hare Krishna undeviatingly. This is called Muni Brat. So Prabhupada has given a whole new meaning and conception to the very well-known and popular Brat, Mon Brat, vow of silence, which is also called Muni Brat. which is very popular among all sants and saints and yogis and spiritual practitioners throughout the length and breadth of India, go off to a mountain cave and take a vow of silence for 10 years. So you're asking, what is the difference between Shiv Shakti, worshipping Shiva and his consort Durga or Parvati, and worshipping Krishna, his consort Radha? So of course, Radha and Krishna, they're the supreme origin of all Shaktis and Shaktimans. And in India, there's all kinds of shastras to facilitate the puja and worship of different kinds of people. Tamasic shastras, Rajasic shastras, and Sattvic shastras to suit and accommodate the people that have tamasic or ignorant outlook or passionate outlook or a balanced sattvic peaceful outlook of life and outlook towards God. But then beyond that, there are shastras which are transcendental, alokik, nirgun. So Shiva Puran, Markandeya Puran, and others, they're tamasic. And Srimad Bhagavatam is Nirgun Puran, Amala Gyanam, Vishnu Puran, Padma Puran, they're also sattvic Purans. But the Bhagavatam is the spotless Puran. There is no touch of the modes of nature there. But only someone who is interested in the transcendental reality will want to pursue the teachings of the Bhagavatam. But those that are in ignorance or passion, they won't understand what is sattvic or what is good. In other words, one who is in ignorance, he can't understand what it means to be goodness in goodness, or someone who is always eating meat and intoxicated, they can't understand what it means to be pure and peaceful and absorbed in sattva-gun. So Vyasadeva compiled all the different Puranas to elevate the Rajasic people to Rajagun and elevate the Rajagun people to sattva-gun, and finally they can come to the Vishuddha sattva, or pure goodness, and take advantage of the teachings of the Bhagavatam. Well, many people, they think that Krishna, or let's say, they think that Lord Shiva is God, and his Shakti Durga, and everything else is his Shakti. But in the Bhagavatam, the Amala Puranam, the Sattvic Purana, and the Upanishads, it's explained that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So someone who's in ignorance or attached to intoxication and laziness and a rather ignorant view of life, tamasic view, he thinks and he studies the Shiva Purana and other Purans and considers that Shiva is God. He can eat anything, cut anything or anyone, give it to Shiva, and he will give you a boon to become a very rich person. Then you can conquer the whole world. But this is only for tamasic persons. It's not a very high standard. And Bhagavatam is telling that Shankar, Shiva, is the Shakti or power of Krishna. He's Shiv Shakti. He's not a Purusha. Shiva Tattva, Shiv Shakti, Jiva Shakti. In Vrindavan, he's here as Gopishwar, Gopi. He can give you the right direction. And Shiva can act as the... He can bring you to Krishna or guide you to Krishna like Guru, Guru Shakti. So you won't find anywhere in Upanishads or Vedas or Shrutis or Bhagavatam that Shankar is God. He is only a power, one of the energies of God. So in Vrindavan, like a Shakti, Shiva becomes Gopishwar, which means Shaktis. So in the spiritual world, Shankar is serving like the Gopis. And with Ram, he's acting as Hanuman. Hanuman, the energy of Ram. Shiva expands as Hanuman. And then here in this world, he comes as Kailashnath, Vishwanath, Amarnath, Bolanath, Shankar. He's always chanting Hari Ram, Hari Ram, Ram Ram, Hari Hari. Ravana, Kamsa, Jarasandha, they were all worshippers of Shiva. But they were destroyed by Bhagavan Ram or Krishna. It's very interesting. Irony here that although Ravana was worshipping Shiva, and Shiva came himself in his form as Hanuman and burned down the whole of Lanka. This shows that Shiva is not supreme. And he himself is an energy or Shakti of Ram. And although he's worshipping, Ravana was worshipping Shiva, Shiva could not become more powerful than Ram. And when Ram's desire was to destroy Ravana, destroy Lanka, then Shiva allowed it. He could not do anything to stop it. In fact, he assisted Ram in his expansion. There's Panchamukh Shiva and Panchamukh Hanuman. They are both Shakti, Tattva, servants of the Lord. So Shiva came as Hanuman to destroy Ravana's kingdom, which he received by the mercy of Shiva. The blessings of Shiva gave Ravana the vast kingdom and power and influence he had over the whole universe. And then that same Shiva, who is controlled not by his worshipper, like Ravan, but controlled by his lord, Ramchandra, that same Shiva as Panchamukh Hanuman, the servant of Ram, the servant of Bhagavan Sri Krishna, or Bhagavan Sri Ram, he came to assist his lord as his servant, as his Shakti, and destroyed the kingdom of Lanka, which was his devotee's kingdom, Shiva's devotee. So the conclusion is that if you worship Shiva as a devotee of Krishna, Vaishnavanam Yata Shampu, then he will help us in attaining Krishna. But if we worship Shiva as a supreme Godhead, or a supreme controller, the Lord of everything, then Shiva himself can come and destroy you. Although Ravana was a worshipper of Shankara, Shankara himself became Hanuman and destroyed Lanka and everything. He killed all his sons. Hanuman killed all the sons of Ravana because Ravana was against Ram. Kamsa was the same way. Kamsa wanted to kill Krishna, and he was worshipping Shiva in the form of a linga called Rameshwara Mahadev. So when Krishna and Balaram came for the wrestling match, Chanura and Mustik and all these powerful wrestlers and Kuvala Yapita, they're all gathered together to gang up and kill Krishna. But then Krishna, when he simply jumped up in the dais to confront Kamsa, just by Krishna's jumping in the air, Kamsa died. The Acharyas say that when he landed there, Kamsa was already dead. And then Krishna said, "Oh, Kamsa, I want to play with you. You're like my uncle. I want to jump on your lap and play with you. But you've already died. What can I do?" So even without the tap in the chest, as it's depicted in Bhagavatam, hitting him in the chest just by the fear of seeing Krishna approaching him as death, mrityu sarvaharaschaham, Kamsa just fainted and died on the spot out of such severe fright, just seeing Krishna jump off the ground and approaching him. And this is the power of Krishna. So obviously his Ishtadev Shiva could do nothing to save him or protect Kamsa, just as Ravana's Ishtadev Shiva could do nothing to protect him from his lord Ram. And then Shiva became Hanuman to destroy. So this deity that Kamsa was worshipping, this deity of Rameshwara Mahadev, he was right there in the middle of the wrestling arena. Deity is actually situated there in the middle of the Ranga Shala. Even today, although the whole city is built around the deity, deity at that time, in Kamsa's time, the deity of Rameshwara Mahadev, the Shivalinga, was right in the middle of the wrestling arena. So in his form as Rameshwara Mahadev, Shiva was watching his great devotee Kamsa get killed. Shiva didn't do anything. That's a nice description. And the Gaur Govinda Lilamrita Gutika, Siddha Krishnadas, who lived at Chakaleshwara, back in the 19th century. He describes the Shivratri day. What Radha and Krishna do to celebrate Shivratri? Very interesting. We celebrate Shivratri by staying up all night and fasting and worshipping the Lord and serving Lord Shiva and worshipping Him and praying for His mercy and chanting different prayers to Lord Shiva. The Shivastikam we chant from Murari Gupta's diary, which was spoken by Lord Chaitanya. Anyway, on Shivratri, Radha and Krishna take their baths and meals like every other morning. Then they meet at the Yoga Peet in Nandagram at Guptakund about 8:30 in the morning, and they're worshipped by all the Paramapreshtha Sakis and Manjaris. And then Radhika and all her Sakis go to Vrindavan along with Radharani's maternal grandmother, Mukhara. And they pick so many beautiful flowers from the banks of the Yamuna in order to do Gopishvara Puja. So they pick flowers in a flower, what says here that they pick flowers in a flower garden on the bank of Brahmakund. Brahmakund is right near Govinda Mandir, Govindaji Mandir, and right next to the property of Ranganath or Rangaji Temple. And they have so many sweets that they prepared, they've carried along in tiffins with them. And then Sri Krishna and his friends also come there to Brahmakund in Vrindavan in order to play holy and sing holy songs. When they arrive there, then Madhu Mangal confronts the Sakis and says, "Hey, why are you picking the flowers?" And Lalita replies haughtily, "For Gopishvar Puja." And then Madhu Mangal says, "What? You should take these flowers and use them to worship Madhav." Then Lalita, she interprets the word Madhav, which is like every Sanskrit word has so many meanings. She interprets Madhav not to mean Krishna, Jayarada Madhav or Kunjavihari, but Lalita takes Madhav to mean something else. And she says, "Madhu, Madhav means springtime. Madhav can refer to the tamal tree or the month of Vaishak." This, every month is named after the Lord, Damodar month and Madhav month. So who wants to worship them? Then Madhav Mangal says, "Then you should worship Govardhan Dhari, the lifter of Govardhan Hill." Nalita replies, "He's a coward boy. Who wants to worship him?" Then Madhav Mangal says, "Well, then worship Pashupati," means the Lord of the Animals, which is a name for Lord Shiva, Pashupati. But he's thinking that it means Krishna, the Lord of the Cows. And then Lalita says, "You are all Pashupal, herders of animals. You mean your master, Madhav Mangal?" Madhav Mangal says, "Yes, our master is Sri Krishna. You should worship him, Lalita." Then Lalita says, "Ha, Hare? Your Krishna commits Pancha Mahapap, the five great sins, drinking, illicit sex, stealing, killing, and cheating. Who wants to worship him? He stole the gold from our bodies, so he's a thief, he's stealing. His Krishna's rolling, intoxicated eyes destroy the pride of the restless wagtail birds. So therefore he's intoxicated, drunk, intoxicated, drinking. And he killed women. So killing. Strihatya. He killed Putana. And he killed cows. He killed calves. Vatsasura. And he killed bulls. Aristasura. And he kidnaps gopis. So he does everything. Then Lalita, ignoring Mother Mangal, she picks up her flowers and gets up to leave. Then Subal comes up and says, "Hey, wait a minute. Let me see what you have in your flower basket." Lalita says, these are all items for worshipping Gopeshwara, like flower garlands and other. And Subal says, come on, let me see. And he puts his hands in the basket. But then Mukara says, "Oh, it's a snake. In the basket. And Subal says, "We are friends of Kaliya Dhamana, Sri Krishna. We are not afraid of any snakes. Let that snake eat you." Then hearing this, Mukara angrily leaves. Then Sri Radhika and her sakis proceed to the springtime forest and enjoy the usual pastimes there with Krishna before going back home with Mukara in the afternoon after having done Gopeshwar Puja. After that, the pastimes will be following the course of holy festivities. So here, Siddha Krishnadas, in his Gaur Govinda Lilamrita Gutika, he's describing that even Radha and Krishna, they honor Lord Shiva as Gopeshwar Mahadev, and they worship him on that day with some flowers and sweets and puja articles. But it's just a naimittic lila, an occasional lila, not every day, but occasional. Then they go on with their nitya lila, playing holi and banbihar and enjoying together on the banks of the Yamuna. Anandakanda Bhagavan is ki Sri Krishna ki jai, Srimati Radha Rani ki jai, Shivratri ki jai. So by hearing these philosophical discussions and hearing about the position of Lord Shiva, how he is the Lord of those unfortunate people in the mode of ignorance, but he cannot protect those people from death. Mrityu sarvaharaschaham. Sri Krishna comes as death. And when he's really pleased, if you really please Shiva as his devoted worshipper, then he reveals to you that my Ishtadev is Shankarshan Ram, Bhagavan, Sri Krishna's expansion. And all of you should become pure devotees of Krishna. This is the teaching of the great Mahajan, Lord Shiva. Shankar Bhagavan ki jai, bham bham bole, bham bham bole, bham bham bole. Om namo Shivaya, Om namo Shivaya, Om namo Shivaya.